You are listening to Mike Seminary and Friends,
a Q1 Network production.
If you have dreams or you're wondering how to make a bigger impact in this world, you're home. Welcome to Mike Seminary and Friends. I'm Deb, Mike's wife. I suggested this idea as a way to keep him busy and out of my way after he retired. So far, it's working. Thanks for listening. It's time for Mike Seminary and Friends.
Welcome to Mike Seminary and Friends, the place where we strive to make a difference, a positive difference, provide you something of value. Heck, from my perspective, we just want to share good stuff. I'm your host, Mike Seminary, and I'm so grateful you've joined us. A big thanks to my friend David Hansen for my theme music, Continental Drift. Search for his work, Serotonin Waters and Moon Dot Soup, on iTunes and Spotify. By the way, I appreciate your comments and guest suggestions. Keep them coming at MikeSeminary.com or Mike Seminary and Friends on Facebook. And please visit us at Apple Podcasts and leave a review. Today, I'm so thrilled to have as my guests a couple, and happen to be friends of mine. We could all learn from when it comes to taking care of ourselves, establishing good habits when it comes to our person, ourself, leadership. We'll be discussing exercise, diet, relaxing, and then some. Sigrid and Arnie Strebe are pretty darn knowledgeable in all of these areas, and I'm so fortunate that they are people in my life. Sigrid and Arnie, welcome to Mike Seminary and Friends. It's great to see you. Thank you for taking time to join me. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Good, thanks, Mike. I gotta go check on the dog. She's barking.
I'll be right back. Yeah, go check on the dog. Arnie, as we were talking before we started the recording, I was not aware that you had published a book, Zero to Something, and it's about leadership. So here's a commitment. I love to read. I love to read material on leadership. I love to read books that have been written and published by people I know and then bring them on a podcast. And I would like to invite you back at some point in time, because leadership today, maybe more than the other time in my life, is really, really important. And so I'm looking forward to reading the book, and we'll get you back on. So just to kind of tee this up, how I recall meeting both of you. Arnie, I think it was our roles as probably mentors on the Young Professionals group, I think is what it was. Right. And I don't know how long you had been in Bismarck at the time, but you were president of a financial institution at the time. And so we became fast friends, in my opinion. And Sigrid, I think the first time I met you, it could have been at some kind of an event where you were two together, but it was really in our home. That's my most vivid recollection of you as an incredibly accomplished yoga teacher, and my wife is passionate about yoga. I am too, but you put me in a pretzel position that I had to get the jaws of life to come over to get me out of, because I'm just one of those kind of guys.
There's a reason we have straps, Mike, just to pull people out of those places. That's why.
So that's how we became to know each other. And one of the things I wanted to accomplish with our time together today is we're rapidly approaching a time of year where a lot of people explore the concept of, you know, I'm going to make a resolution to change this in my life. I'm going to make a resolution to take this out of my life or add this to my life. And a lot of it is in terms of personal growth, development, and health, not just exercise. So that's kind of what I want to talk about. And talk a lot about your personal experiences. And then, Sigrid, you and I have a very interesting similarity in our lives where we're healthy people and something came about in our life we wasn't expecting. So I'm going to go to you first, Sigrid. Give us a little bit of background on how you became this entrepreneur, yoga instructor, club owner, that's not the right word, studio owner. How did all of that happen for Sigrid?
Well, I did not come to movement or exercise in air quotes early in my life. I was always the person that was, had a steady diet of chocolate and lattes. And so that was my that was my nutrition plan. And it kept me thin for quite some time. But I would have been only a tasty treat if a bear was going to find me. I'd have just been like a candy bar. And I was not fit. I was slim, but I was not fit. And I had a store and I started offering classes for the employees. And so that's how I got started into where I'm at now. So that was how I got into the movement part of my body. I've basically been an entrepreneur since I was seven or eight. We used to remember Grip Magazine. That's a long time ago, but
yes,
Grip Magazine. And then you have to go around and sell seeds door to door. That's where I started. And in between there, I had a few businesses along the way. Some were not successful. I used to own a shoe store in Oregon, and that's a wonderful place to start. But that was where I actually owned a business with inventory that I had to keep track of, and it was something I loved. And it was the service side of it that really excited me. When we moved back to Bismarck in 2015, I went someplace to see if I could teach, because that's what we've moved several times. And that's what was my plan, was always to go in and teach somewhere and just work for someone else. And when I got that first offer, I was shocked, shall we say, of what the offer was to teach at that place. And so I decided at that point, I was going to try and figure it out and see if I could run my own studio here. And so that was 6 years ago now. Since then, we've grown from our original very small 200 square foot space into another studio that we're currently in. And then in January of 2020, good timing, by the way, we opened a second studio. Yay. That was briefly open and then closed for a while. And so now we also do teacher training. So we teach people to be teachers. We have our in Fargo, Bismarck, and Williston. We started our 10th class for Bismarck in January. So it's come a long way from selling, Grip Magazine and trying to figure out that working for myself was something. I don't know that I could work for somebody else now. It's a different world.
At some point in time, I'm going to go back to what happened in 2020 for all of us, but more specific with regards to entrepreneurs and what all of a sudden you weren't able to do and how you turned on a dime. But I want to go back to something that you said, which is so profound to me anyway. I was slim, but I wasn't fit. That's like pulling the golden ring, right? I was the same way. I've never had a weight issue, so I always associated that I'm slim, so I'm a fit fellow, right? And I think a lot of people think that because I'm slim or I don't have much body fat, I'm in really good health. And for the majority of people, that's not accurate at all.
No, it's not. I mean, I was slim, but it was lattes and chocolate bars. So that is, it's a good vegetarian diet. I mean, if you're into that kind of thing, but I wouldn't recommend that route for it.
Yeah. So are you saying there isn't a connection between you selling seeds and Yul Gibbons being the spokesperson for grape nuts? None?
Well, there might be. I mean, it could be. I don't know. We can't ask him, so we don't know.
Well, Arnie, we met, as I mentioned, Board of Mentors, or whatever it was called, for the Young Professionals Group in Bismarck, North Dakota. And it was sometime after that, I think I heard you speaking somewhere, that I learned that you were raised by a Nagasaki atomic bomb survivor. Here's my first question. First of all, before the question, I don't know anybody that I'm aware of that can say they were raised by a survivor of one of those two bombs that were used towards the end of World War II. What kind of influence did that have under the roof of your house? Pretty darn dramatic. So I just have to ask that question.
That's a tough question. I might even ask Sigurd for some help on that. I think, when you think about that, I can remember asking my mom when I was like in the first grade, and I think my dad was into Vietnam, just saying, "Hey, mom, could you come in to show and tell and talk about the Nagasaki bomb?" And could never figure out why she said no. As a first grader, you just kind of want to bring your mom in and kind of have her walk through some of that. And I think, years later, I just kind of realized that the influence that my mom had on me was she was very kind, assumed positive intent. And it was kind of amazing because here was a person that had, 7 years old when the bomb went off in Nagasaki, ended up marrying a blonde hair, blue eyed guy from, originally from Medford, Wisconsin. And what I thought was amazing was not just her acceptance of, of an American, but then also on the Japanese side in Nagasaki, my grandparents and my aunts and uncles were very accepting of my dad and also very accepting of us as kids. So I think that part of the book in regards to the book that I authored was Zero to Something. And that really, I learned a lot of that from my mom in regards to, she always said, you can always do something, you don't have to do nothing. And so her influence on me and my brother and sister, I think, was deep and profound. And Sigurd, knew my mom when she was alive. So I think that she shared with us, a loving and kind and caring spirit and to accept others for who they are and not necessarily who you want them to be. That's what I would say about my mom.
By the way, you can find the book at zerotosomething.com, right? At that website.
The best place to find the book would be on Amazon, and then you can go to a local bookstore and you can order it through them as well. But that's my recommendation, would just be because we're kind of reconstructing the Zero to Something website. So
here's my next question of you, Arnie. You're currently for the North Dakota Department of Human Services, the Chief Administrative and Financial Officer. And you have such a unique background, both in the financial industry, pardon me, and then the food distribution industry, with big names, big companies, big responsibilities. Where along the lifeline for you, Arnie, did you establish this habit of discipline in so many parts of your life that also served you well in maybe that's the wrong question to ask based on your laughter, but based on your ability to have these very significant roles and you did them well. When did that happen?
I think it goes back to my mom and dad and the discipline and the structure, being raised in an Asian or a Japanese culture. My dad's heritage is German. So a lot of structure, a lot of discipline, a lot of accountability, a lot of, you earn what you get, and you earn what you get through hard work, and you earn what you get through dedication and discipline. And I'll turn it over to Sigurd because I think she probably has something she wants to add as well. No.
Bring it on, Sigurd. What do we need to know?
I don't know if I wanted to say it, Sigurd.
Well, no. Yeah, he has a lot of self-discipline. He has high expectations of himself. And that bleeds over into, of course, expectations outside of that. But one of his strong suits is also his strong sense of compassion, that ability to look at someone and maybe it's more empathy is what the word is, maybe put himself in their shoes and try to work out something that can help both on both situations or both sides of the problem. So it's not always just my way or the highway. It's a lot of trying to work with people, trying to build them up, trying to make, help them be better, be their best selves.
Boy, we need a lot more people with that depth of heart and caring, and they're more others-centered versus self-centered at these times that we're in right now, because there's too much of it's my way or the highway at some of the highest and most important positions of leadership in our country and at the particular time. And it's sad that we don't have more of that, by the way. So here's a question for both of you, and you can decide which one takes it first. Are you disciplined in every parts of your life? Every part of your life? I just...
No.
Arnie's shaking his head. No.
It's a hard no.
It's a hard no. And we don't want to go into it. We want to move on to another subject.
No, I think it's one of those things where I think that if you're disciplined in everything, I think that that gets to be somewhat unhealthy. Right? So... I know that I think in most cases we're disciplined with the things that are important to us, but also important to others. You know, so I think that when I think about, I would say when I retired from the Army and started to, you know, working in, if you want to call it corporate America, for those larger companies, initially I think I was, you know, still focused on a little bit about making that transition from the, what I call the green blood, so to speak, to the civilian side of the house. And for me, it was just trying to find my way. And I think that in some cases, I probably overcompensated and maybe was too disciplined. And I think that there were some folks along the way that really had a positive impact and influence on me and kind of adjusted my firm, direct, you know, you're going to do this, you're going to do it this way or the highway. And so I was very, very fortunate many years ago after I left the service. And even while I was in the service, I had a lot of servant leaders that I worked with and worked for that helped me kind of take a look at, say, you know, sometimes it's okay. You just need to know when to let go, right? You can't have structure and discipline in everything that you do, because I think it just crosses the line. And then I think part of your life ends up in the ditch, so to speak, or outside the guardrails.
I agree with that. For me, when I started becoming very disciplined in certain areas of my life, it first started in college when I wanted to go out for football and did, and somebody encouraged me to start running. And then a year and a half later, and I took this up at, I think I was 24 or 25, actually fairly old to take this up, martial arts, taekwondo, and then combative sports. And my Korean instructor, Mo Yanyun, he was a very disciplined person. And so all of a sudden I adopted this structure, because I was also competitive and I wanted to fight. And there are only certain things he'd allow if you wanted to be somebody that was combative. And you had to be very regimented, very disciplined. And so I became, in certain areas of my life, more disciplined than I've ever have been. And I'm still that way in certain areas, but not all of them. How about you, Sigrid?
I like to fly by it. Only, how shall I phrase this, Mike? It only appears that I'm flying by the seat of my pants at all times. But in my brain, I have a plan and I know what I want it to look like. I know what I want it to feel like. I know what I want the experience to be. I have this grand vision of what I can see the end of the project looks like. And sometimes I am very much a person that's like, okay, that didn't work. Next. What did we learn from that? We don't ever start over. We start from experience. We start from a place of that didn't work. Let's move on to the next thing. But, you know, just adding to it. So my discipline comes from knowing what I want the end product to be, knowing where I want it to be in the end, but being flexible enough along the way that I can make quick changes. How's that? But again, it only appears that I don't know what I'm doing, and it makes him crazy. What's your plan? What's your written down plan? I don't have a plan. Like, it's going to work. Just trust me. Just trust me.
But she actually has a really solid discipline within chaos, right? It's chaos to me. It's abnormal. It's uncomfortable. But in her world, it's comfortable. And I think the thing about it is when she comes out the other side of the tunnel, it always seems to work, right? Because to her point, she's thinking about stuff. And she, when she gets to the finish line or when she gets to the goal line, I would say in like almost all cases, it's very impressive. You know, I mean, she gave a speech to an organization with, I think, like 300 people there. And I was like, you know, what you're going to talk about? And she's like, well, I've got it.
I had an idea.
She had an idea. And it's like, you know, it's like 2 weeks out. What are you doing, honey? How's it going? I've got an idea. 1 week out. I've got an idea. 3 days out. I've got an idea. It says, will you be willing to share your idea? She says, well, not right now. And then so she gave the presentation. And then I had people from all over the state actually saying, oh, my gosh, your bride was, I call her my bride. Your wife was just so phenomenal. I'm going like, well, she's a great communicator. But her ability to kind of work through what I would consider chaos, it's normal for her.
So in this part of your lives, Arnie, I think I just heard I'm the written plan guy. You have strategies, checkpoints. I got to check this box.
Measurements
and Sigrid's going like this. And Sigrid, you're not necessarily in this area of your life. You're kind of oil and water.
Oh yeah.
But we learned how to make it mix like a good salad dressing.
I think we combine our strengths, right? It's kind of like when you think about athletics, I'm still wanting to compete and Sigrid's about complete. Okay. And it used to drive me crazy because when she did her first Ironman, I'm going like, okay, now this is what you need to do. And she's like, I've heard you coach people for the last 10 years. I know exactly what I'm doing. And it's like, well, do you want me to coach you or do you not want me to coach you? So I want you to coach me, but I want you to tell me, you know, certain things that I don't know, because I've heard you talk about this all the time. So yeah, it is like oil and water. I also think we know what each other's strengths are and what each other's weaknesses are. And I think about the things that I've been able to do the last 10, 15 years is because she's my rock. She's always there. Mm-hmm. She gets me. And I think we've worked on trying to get each other, you know, since we've been married.
So I wasn't going to go here now. I was going to save this till later, but you mentioned, this is about Ironman. How many have you competed in collectively and individually?
Well, I'll go first because my answer is easier. One.
One.
Okay. Yes, I did one. I did a half iron. I had a little stretch where I was like, okay, I'm going to do this because everybody else is doing it around me. So I'm going to do it. And then all the guys in the group had done all these things and then they would come together and they'd talk smack. Oh yeah, it's so hard. It's so hard. Oh my gosh, it's so hard.
I don't remember those conversations, but she does.
That's how they went. I'm so hard. I'm so manly. Oh, look at me. So I just thought, I rode my bike. I did a little swim one day. And I hadn't swum since high school. And then I did a little ride on my bike and I had 100 miles under my bike after 2 years. And I was like, yeah, I can do this. And I didn't tell him I was going to do it. So I just went down. We were down in Florida and I stood in line and he came up to me and said, what are you doing? I said, I'm signing up for the race. And he was a little surprised, to say the least. And mine was basically, the reason I did it was basically to be like, if I can do it, anybody can do it. It's not that hard. You guys just need to, whatever. You're not that great. Things we can't say. I'll show you. There we go.
Okay. So the stretch of time from the day you're signing up to the race day, how much time?
I have a year.
It was a long year for me.
It was a year.
It was a long year for me. I was a coach. I couldn't get out of it. It was like, I was the coach. No, you're coaching me. It's like, well, what about Susie? Nope, you're coaching me. So it was a, probably never will coach her again, but it was a good year.
Arnie, how many have you participated? And then also the ultra races that you have participated. When you first published that on Facebook, I looked at that. I said, what? I've never heard of such a thing. So it was fascinating to me. So go ahead.
I think I've done probably over 10 half Ironmans, which is like a 70.3. I've done 6 1/3 Ironmans. The reason I say a third is because I was sick 1 year and all I could do was a swim. I've done a lot of long distance runs. I've done a lot of road marches in the military that were anywhere from 50 to 100 miles. And then I did the Ultra. The Ultra was a 3-day endurance event, and all those races that I'm talking about, Sigrid has been the rock. And the one reason that, you know, she wanted to do the Ironman, because she was our Sherpa, okay, because she's talking about her brother, my brother-in-law, my brother, and some other folks that, you know, travel around the country to do some of these races. And so she was just tired of being the bag lady or the person that was, you know, picking us up from point to point and, you know, getting our gear ready and stuff like that. So then she showed us that she could actually do it. And I think the most important thing about that was I learned again, and I've learned this many times before and many times afterwards, that you never tell a woman that she can't do something. That was probably the most important thing that I learned and relearned and continue to learn over and over, because all of her friends were calling me saying, hey, you know, Arnold, why are you letting Sigrid do the Ironman? I'm like going like, and they're all telling her she can do it. And I'm going like, I don't know if you can do it. And I'm like, so, and she did, you know, she showed everybody and she showed herself that she could. It was one of those things where it got done. But I'm more of compete. I want to compete against folks in my age group. I also really want to compete against myself. I like going back to courses and seeing if I can go faster than what I did the last time. And Sigrid is, you know, when I was coaching her, she did a sprint, an Olympic, a half Ironman, the Ironman. And I would go to those races with her and she would be on her bike and she would be yakking and talking to a whole bunch of people. And I would say, what are you doing? Because you're going to transition. You're supposed to go back and get your gear on and get ready for the next, you know, next event. She was sitting there talking. Well, look at Arnold. Here's my friend Susie. Says, well, when did you meet her? Just met her on the bike. Oh, okay. And then when she come in from the run, she'd go, oh, look at, here's Jill and there's Jane. It's like, well, when did you meet these folks? On the run, you know. So it was just kind of two different mindsets where I'm always about competing and going as fast as I can. And unless it's a training race, but she was always about completing and making new friends. And she does that well.
You didn't say how long you're silly, what the distances were for your 3-day.
Oh, for the ultra day, it's a 3-day event. So day one, you swim 6.2 miles and you ride your bike 93. Day two, you ride your bike, I think it's 171 miles. And then day three, you run 2 marathons back to back. So it's 52.4. And then you have 12 hours to do that. And it's an invite only. They invite people from around the world. You have to qualify for it. And so you apply for it. They invite you. And so there was 40 slots. We had 24 athletes. I think it was from 8 or 9 different countries from around the world. We're up in Canada. And what's bizarre is when you first get there, it's all about, you know, I'm going to go back and compete against this person. But once you get through that swim, the whole mindset changes. How can you help the other folks that are on the course complete the race? Because of the 24 that actually started, I think there were 21 that actually completed the whole event. And that's odd because normally they have almost 100% completion because people have spent so much time preparing. And then when you're on the course, you're not competing anymore. You're helping out. And we're still very close. It's 2019, 2 years later. We're still very, very close with all of those athletes and families that we participated with in that event. So it was, you know, I won't say life changing, but it was a great experience. And I couldn't have done that without Sigrid's support. She's the one that dialed in my nutrition. She was very helpful in my long bike rides. At a support crew of 4 people, it was a monumental undertaking, and there's no way I would have been able to complete it without her support and other 3 individuals that helped out.
One thing I remember about the post during that event, well, before I forget, thank you, Arnie, for your service. Very much appreciate it. Was one of the other ways Sigrid helped in terms of motivation. There were times she appeared to be dressed like a relative of David Bowie from Ziggy Stardust. There was something about the outfit that if you were a competitor on the course, that was going to motivate you. It was. Am I right?
Oh, they loved him. I mean, because all the athletes that were kind of in the same area that I was, and I'll later talk about this. I remember one time when I was coming down the hill, and you could actually have your support team run with you. And my best friend from college, Tim Francis, he was with me when we were coming over this hill because it was a really hilly course. And I see these two images way a mile or so away. And I'm going like, what is that, Tim? And Tim goes, I don't know what it is. And then as we got closer and closer, it was Sigrid and my coach dressed up in gold pants, black shirts, doing hammer time, can't touch this. Oh, my gosh. And then it was so funny because they would sit there and other athletes before me or other athletes after me, you know, would get to see the show. Right. And yeah, it is. She's just one phenomenal. She's just an awesome person. I'm very, very lucky to have her as my bride. I'm very lucky to have her in my life. I mean, you know, I had some really bad health experiences in 2008, 2009. If it wasn't for her, I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't be alive. So she's awesome.
Yeah. The other fun person that we had with that on that trip was Shelley Dahl. And if you've never had a chance to see her or not see her, meet her and just let her start her whole routine, she's hilarious. So there were points where we were dressed up as ketchup, like, come on, you guys, ketchup. There were times that she had a Richard Simmons wig on and then jumped out, literally like scared the crap out of people because she would jump out from in front of the car with this wig on and scary in the middle of the woods. Just gonna put that out there. She would write down jokes as they went along.
They weren't really funny, but you know,
when you're tired, they're hilarious.
Yeah, they're hilarious now, but they was like, if you looked at it when you were like, you know, not, you know, delirious. Yeah,
delirious. He was delirious.
Sigrid, there are times you just have this bigger than life personality, which just I get pulled in because of it. By the way, by chance, when in junior high and high school, maybe even college, were you ever in performance like musicals or theater?
Oh, she was a performer. She wore the mascot's uniform.
I did wear the mascot. Yes, I was the Blue Jay for a while. I was Blue Jay for a couple times. Then I hung that up because I couldn't make it as a cheerleader. So it was that. But no, I was never in any of those things. I was always felt it would appear that I had confidence, but I really didn't. So laughter has always been my way to kind of skirt around that confidence issue.
So the next thing I wanted to ask you about, and you can go first, Sigrid, both of you, you were running your business, Transitions Yoga. And Arnie, you were at the North Dakota Department of Human Services when the pandemic hit. So what did that do to your business, March 17th or whatever it was, somewhere in that area? And then what did you have to do to survive, Sigrid?
March 15th, we had our last in-studio classes. We had a class that graduated from the teacher training program. And then I don't think the shutdown order came until later that week. So that was a Sunday. And I think the shutdown order was the following weekend. But we could see what was happening, and it didn't look good. And I thought, I don't want to be the place where this is being spread at that time through our community. So we decided that that would be our last day of classes. We closed on the 16th. And again, in my brain for years, I've been thinking about how we could do, trying to formulate a way that we could do online classes. Because I've taught in so many places and people ask for it. And it's just been like, it's too hard. I can't possibly do it. It can never happen. It's just too hard. So we're class on the 15th. We closed on the 16th. No classes at all. The 17th, we were completely 100% online studio. And we magically figured out what was the hardest thing to do that we could never do because it was too hard. We were able to do it in about 24 hours.
And that's amazing.
Yeah, we ran a full, we did have to shut down the Mandan studio, and we ran the teachers some of them came in, we bought a new computer, we bought some other things. We had to figure out how to send out, now it seems silly, how to send out Zoom links to everyone, how to send, get people online, how to advertise, how to market for it, how to let people know, here's a, you can use soup cans for props if you don't have something at home. Here's how you can make a home studio. Here's how to do yoga with your children climbing all over you. Trying to do, figure out a way so that it could be a place for people to come back to their mat, because at that time, and still, learning to calm that nervous system and trying to find a place to like relax and find a place of like, really, it was trying to help people find a place of normalcy with people that they already knew, people they had trusted, and have a, and kind of creating a routine for people was really the goal. And so we either people, the teachers either came into the studio, used the computer, set up there, or there a lot of teachers taught from their house. I mean, we taught from the basement here. Some mornings it was, and then you didn't know how long it was going to last. And so it was a lot. And then trying to be positive when on the inside, there were days when it comes to the business side of stuff, emotional stuff, like people, I cry a lot, right? But the business side, I'm like, let's go, let's do it. This is what we're going to do. This is how it's going to be. And I don't even think he knew what to do with me, because there were days I'd be like, I just don't know if we're going to make it. He's just like, oh, okay.
Well, I knew she was going to make it. I think the thing was, what I was so proud of was the fact that she took immediate action. She didn't stall. She didn't freeze. You know, she kind of looked at, okay, hey, this is what's happening. What can I do? What things do I need to do to make this work? And what I thought was really impressive is she was the first one that got, you know, online classes going right away. And then what I thought was, and she doesn't talk about this, is she has a lot of friends around the country, around the world that she knows that are in the yoga space. And, you know, she was being asked for information in regards to how did you do this online? How did you do that online? How did you package your classes? And so the one thing that's very powerful about Sigrid is she's just a beautiful human being. And also she's a, you know, a serial entrepreneur, and she's it when it comes to the business. She knows how to run a successful business. She knows how to come up with new business concepts. I mean, when I think about what she does, you know, she would do very, very well in corporate America just because she's so creative in her thinking. Not that she wants to ever work there, but yeah, she really responded well. And I think that there were, I don't know if it's 30 or 40% of the yoga studios across the country went out of business. And I think also too, she had a really strong team. The team was very, very supportive, and she's able to kind of work with those team members as far as bringing out the best in them. And I thought her team members did a really good job bringing out the best in Sigrid too. So it was really a solid partnership. And I think when you talk about, there's a certain like magnetism about Sigrid. It's almost like she has, you know, what you see is what you get. She's very sincere. She's a servant leader. You know, she's always looking at how can she help others be successful. And it's kind of, I think that's where we get along so great, is we both kind of have that mantra, is, you know, it's not about us. It's about what can we do to help other people be successful. And success is defined in many ways. It's not just financial. It's about their well-being, how they're getting along with people and things like that. So I was very proud of her and her team as far as how they handled the initial stages of the pandemic. And then not just how they handled it, how they responded and actually built a new business to support that new normal, as you hear so much.
And that's still there. And we weren't the only ones that did it. There was another studio in town that did it the first day, because she and I kind of coordinated a little bit. And we are still, we run side-by-side businesses that are just a little bit different. But she and I communicate all the time. We have pass off business ideas. So I think that you can collaborate with other businesses and still be competitive. And I think that we need to really learn that together. If we work all together and try to move forward, that's going to be way better than just trying to like give a person a hand up and not a push down, is really the business side behind that. And just even, not even the business side, but in life, like what if you help someone up so that they were with you and then you had someone to work for it and you could do more of what you want to do instead of being like wasting your time trying to keep your thumb on them. That's just a complete waste of time.
Yeah. By the way, I'm going to first 100% concur with what you just said, Arnie, about Sigrid and her strengths and her ability in terms of building relationships. Let me ask you this question, Sigrid. It's still hybrid. You have people in the studio and people doing it virtual, right?
Yes.
I don't think that's ever going to change.
Nope.
Because we'll have more pandemics. We'll have more. And I think the future is going to be even brighter. I had a person I was visiting with the other day in a different industry. And I did some research to make sure that I understood the future of his industry. And there's this, that's where you saw me turn my back a second. I wanted to make sure I related this to you correctly. The global VR, virtual reality, and augmented reality growth is projected to do this. Currently, we spend about, a $40 billion marketplace globally. By 2030, they're projecting $1.3 trillion. And here's what I think that's going to mean for a lot of industries. I can see that in time, you will have a hologram of you or your instructors that it isn't necessarily on my computer anymore. It's on my little projector I have built off of my computer. And all of a sudden, you're in the homes or wherever these people are participating. I am absolutely convinced that's coming. When, I don't know. I just know, I know this, the plans for the Theodore Roosevelt Presidential Library, there'll be a hologram there. And it's going to, if I say this incorrectly, I apologize, it's going to understand what the person in front of them is asking and then relay the information, because that's what's happening with algorithms, artificial intelligence, and then you throw in virtual reality, augmented reality, and the ability to have holograms. I think the future of the, you called it the movement business, I call it yoga, the movement business, fitness, and others, is going to be really, really exciting. And the world will be the oyster for some folks. It's coming, is my point. As a matter of fact, I just ordered a book the other day, co-authored. Actually, there's three authors. One of the authors is Henry Kissinger, one of my favorite diplomats of all time. And it's about artificial intelligence. And so I think your business is going to be exploding in different ways in the next 3 to 5, 6, 7 years. Arnie, what was it like for you when the pandemic hit and you had to turn on a dime?
It was an eye-opener. I know that the governor has signed me and Sean Riley to be what they call co-leads for this continuity of government services, and we had 10 sub-teams. And so for me, it was, I'd been with the state for about a month, month and a half. I didn't know a lot about the state. And then our focus was, when we were working on the continuity of government services, was life safety. Everything that we focused on is, what are we going to do to positively impact life safety and the preservation and of life? The second piece was, is how do we impact the customers of North Dakota? I'd say citizens, but not everybody that lives in North Dakota is a citizen. And then the other piece was our team North Dakota. So for over a year, Sean Riley and I were co-leads for these 10 different teams, and we kind of helped the teams look at, how was the state going to operate and function differently in the new normal, right? I mean, we look at all the employees that started working from home. A lot of, when you think about the Department of Motor Vehicles, when you think about the state hospital, people were still working on site, or human service centers, they were still working on site. So it was a major eye-opener, and then taking a look at the Department of Human Services with, 2,200-plus employees, how do we continue to serve the folks that are living in North Dakota in a positive way as we navigated through this sea of change, right? Because everything was changing. The way we're delivering services was not the same. It was abnormal and an unusual environment. So for me, it was and I feel very fortunate that I was at that place at that time. Because I think when we think about, how can we serve the team, North Dakota folks, or those folks in DHS, it really served my purpose or my philosophy at that time, you know, based on where I was with my career. It was about how can I give back to the state of North Dakota? So if you would have asked me 20 years ago, I'd say I'm going to go back and build my career. It's been a long time where I've thought about building my career. I'm at that point in time where it's more about how can I help others be successful? How can I help others live a better life? So for me, it was a challenge, but I was also very appreciative of all the Team North Dakota folks that were on the team looking at life safety and looking at taking care of the folks that lived in North Dakota.
How long did you work remotely, or are you still doing?
I'm actually still working remotely, and then on occasion I go into the office. Like during the legislative session, I was in the office for 4 months. So. And a lot of my team members are still working from home. It's really come down to it's a personal choice. If folks feel more comfortable working in the office, and they can work in the office.
Sure. So here's how I'm going to transition to why I originally thought this would be a great conversation with the three of us to talk about folks that are going to make decisions to modify their lifestyle in the upcoming year. I'm going to do it this way. We can talk all we want to about how do we finance healthcare for everyone and what does that look like. And in theory, it's a great idea. Pulling it off is another, but you know, it's something we need to talk about, right? But if we're not taking care of ourselves, it's all kind of irrelevant anyway. More importantly, when we're taking care of ourselves, we're not immune from having certain issues arise in our life. And I'm not sure about you and me, Arnie. I'm not aware of the health challenges you had. I know about Sigrid. We both have something in common. We exercise. I think you probably have a far better diet than mine. Mine's reasonably good. But we both had issues with our ticker, our heart. Mm-hmm. What happened for you, Sigrid, and when, and how did that change your life?
In July 1st, 2018, I had a heart attack, but I'd been having symptoms for it for about 5 days before that. So, and I was healthy. I had good cholesterol levels. It wasn't part of my family history. It wasn't anything that I should be, in air quotes, concerned about. Nothing that even came on my radar. I just thought it was indigestion. I thought it was a sore back. I thought it was some of the activities that I had done the 5 days before. Because as humans, right, most of us are taught that if you get the first symptom is usually electrical shooting down your left arm, right? If you have pain in your left arm, then you're having a heart attack. Well, in fact, for women, that's usually one of the last symptoms of having a heart attack. And I didn't know that until July 2nd. So learning what those symptoms were afterwards caused me to go out into the community and speak about that, because there's a staggering statistic that 1 in 3 women die from heart-related disease, something to do with their heart. Which, if you were in a room, so one of the things I do at the end of when I do a presentation somewhere is ask everybody at a table or whatever to count off 1, 2, 3, and then pick a number and have that person stand up, have them move away from the table and say, what would it be if you came back to this event next year and that person was not here? Because that is the actual, I think people need to visually see what 1 in 3 looks like. And it's staggering. It's especially when you have a table and 1/3 of the table would not come back for that event next year because they would no longer be living. So I think it's a good visual for people to see that, to understand that. I had, mine was not based on it was a tear in my artery. So the tear in my artery, but your artery has three layers, one layer open, the blood pool behind it, closed up the artery. And then by the time we actually got to the hospital, I had 100% blockage and I took two stents to clear it. Yeah. The photos are pretty remarkable. When you look at it and you're like, well, it really wasn't that bad. And then you see the picture, you're like, holy Moses. It was not great. Yeah. It was 100% blockage. And then the two stents really are what, not just one, like, so my theory is like, I like to do things in pairs. So that made it easy, right? I have a pair of stents, jewelry.
Okay. So thanks for sharing that. Did you modify diet and stuff afterwards or
no?
Any changes?
No. The only thing, we went to the dietitian and she was like, you should be maybe like, I don't know, maybe a full vegan diet. I'm not really sure because you have everything else. You're doing great. And again, my cholesterol levels were low. It changed the way I moved because it was so unexpected for me. What it changed for me was that making sure if I want to go do something, that there maybe is someone else around, because it's, for me, it's a mental thing. The change was mental. What it also changed for me was how I approach life. Like, I was pretty like, I got to get some things done anyway. But after that, I was like, okay, if I'm not here, what's on my list of things that I haven't done? And why am I waiting? What am I waiting for? Who am I waiting for? What are the real obstacles here? So for me, we already have a pretty decent diet, I guess. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. So let me ask this question first to Arnie. I'm going to tee it up this way. So we just heard that a person that was good health, involved in yoga, eats well, all of a sudden got a heart attack. I had something very, very similar. I've been running since 1975, and you've all heard that plenty of times. It's an everyday thing. And my diet was reasonably good. All of a sudden, I have two stents in my heart. Arnie, we're at a time of year where people, oh, by the way, and so if you're not somebody that's in that percentile of you're already exercising, you're taking pretty good care of yourself, imagine what could be in your future with regards to diabetes, heart disease, et cetera, et cetera, if it could happen to us, right? Mm-hmm. So, Arnie, those people that are in the process of making some kind of decision about modifying their life, and then specifically adding exercise to maybe a life that's fairly sedentary, what's the one thing or maybe two things you'd want them to know about making a decision? And then more importantly, how would you encourage them to make sure that you keep the decision in play and not quit like so many people will do? Because it's what we do as humans.
Yeah, I actually ask people, would you be open to committing 4% of your day to doing something healthy in regards to, you know, fitness or just health in general? And then I ask the second question. It says, are you open to 2% of your day? And they go like, why do you ask 4%? Why do you ask 2%? And then I ask the question, would you be open to doing this like Monday, Wednesday, Friday? Yeah, I would. Because 4% of your day is an hour, right? So if you work out Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and you go back and do an hour, and there's, you know, research says you need at least 20 minutes of cardio, right? You don't have to be an Ironman. You don't have to do ultras. You know, you can just go and walk. And if you did that for 4% of your day, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and then take a look at, you know, looking at what you're eating and how you're eating, then the types of food that you're eating, you can significantly reduce, heart disease. You can significantly reduce having a cardiac arrest. Now, Sigrid is kind of like an anomaly. You know, she did all the right things the right way, right? And her flap, and I actually have the picture of the before picture and after picture is in my wallet. I carry it around with me all the time. But I ask folks, okay, would you be willing to commit 4% of your day? And if not 4%, 2% of your day, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, because 2% is 30 minutes. And then what I look at is, you know, when you think about doing the right thing the right way at the right time, and you think about the loved one that is going to have to suffer if you're not there, you know, with those decisions that you're making, would it pass what I call the red face test? So for me, it's, you know, I'm kind of a numbers guy. I go back 4%, 2%. And then when people kind of process it, they go like, well, you know, geez, it's 2% of my day is 30 minutes. It's not really that much. And I think of, okay, do they have the support of their family? Do they have the right resources? And then I think the other key thing about that is, you know, kind of reinforcing that they enjoy the journey, right? Because it's a major pivot. It's a major shift from, you know, it might be decades of having a certain behavior and being, you know, because a lot of folks say, well, I'm not very athletic. Well, you don't have to be athletic. It's like when Sigrid has new folks that, you know, get on the mat, they always say, I'm not very flexible. You don't have to be flexible. And it goes back to what my mom had talked about, zero something. You're always better off doing something versus zero. So I know I've kind of jumped around a little bit, Mike, but it'd be like 4%, 2%, do the right thing the right way at the right time. And then realize, of course, that whatever decisions you make are not just impacting yourself, they're impacting the loved ones around you.
It's great advice.
And Mike, Sigrid's raising her hand for some reason.
Now, I was going to say, Sigrid, you're next.
Okay. I think if you're going to commit to something, you can't do it just for because you want to lose 10 pounds, 20 pounds, whatever. Because as soon as that happens and that you hit your number, whatever that is, it's then you just go back to whatever your habits were. What I've seen people do is when they start to shift, what's their why? When you start to shift and try to figure out what's your why would you want to do that? Is it because I've seen it with students, because they want to be able to go hunting with their grandkids, or they want to be able to get on the floor, or they want to continue to have a lifestyle that they can move when they're in their 70s, 80s, 90s, instead of being sedentary. What is your why? Why do you want to do it? And it can't be just to lose a few LBs. It's got to be a reason that is a lifestyle choice, something that you want to do a long time and not just to a number, get to it and get to a new pair of pants, because whatever, we all buy way too many clothes anyway. So it's got to be a reason that is a lifestyle choice. Like, why do you want to do it? And that when I see that shift in with students, everything else just changes. Things fall away. Like, I don't want to do that anymore because it doesn't fit what my end goal is. I don't want to do that anymore because it's not who I want to be in the future. Because we can all, I mean, if we were the same person we were when we were 18 and we had the same thought patterns and the mentality and all the things that happen when you're 18 to this glorious age of older than 18, we all change. We're all changing all the time. So give yourself the grace to allow yourself to change, become who you want to be now. Yes, maybe 10 years ago you were this person and this is what you looked like and this is how life was. And then you realize 6, 7, 10 years later that you're like, that doesn't suit who I am now or where I want to be. And so your why has to change, and then the way you move through life will change with it.
If we were in a church, I'd say, can I get an amen?
Amen. Yeah.
Well, I like what you both just shared. The why, whys are always important. I think making life-changing choices and decisions are very difficult if there isn't a specific why. And Arnie, I like that you said the red face deal, where a little bit of time at a time, not going at it too hard, which so many people will do for all the wrong reasons. At the end of the day, there's so many wonderful reasons to, when we make a decision to modify our life, when it comes to our health, it's about others, it's our community, moving better, feeling better, all of that. And there's not a price for that, but there's a price for if we don't do something. Mm-hmm. Not that you can't have issues like we have just shared, if you're a person that takes good care of yourself, but the odds are if you're not, the odds are far more significant that you're probably going to have issues that are expensive, et cetera, et cetera. Sigrid, what's the best way for people to get a hold of you? You have a website you'd like to share with us?
We sure do. Our website is transitions with an S at the end, transitions transitionsyoga.com. So transitions, I guess it's -.com, transitions-yoga.com. And we have classes 7 days a week. We start as early as 5:45 in the morning. We have classes. We finish at 8, a lot of days. We have aerial. We have classes for beginners. We have classes for advanced students, students that have been practicing for a while or want something, a little bit of a challenge.
Pre-recorded.
And we have pre-recorded classes. That was the other, one of the other things we did during the pandemic is we had created an on-demand library, which that was too hard to do before too. So there's a lot of different ways. Come to class. You can watch, you can practice from wherever you're at. We have hybrid classes all 7 days a week.
There we go. And Arnie, your book, Zero to Something, is available on Amazon. But you also have a website where people can learn more about you, zerotosomething.com.
Yeah, I would recommend they go to neverquitcoach.com. Actually, Sigrid just built that site. She's also quite the magnificent website builder. She's like multi-talented. And I've already had a lot of positive comments about my neverquitcoach.com website.
Sigrid's cheap, and she likes to do it on her own. That's really what it comes down to.
Well, I didn't want to say that, but yeah, she's cheap.
Sigrid likes to do things on her own so that she can just pretend that she has extra time and not spend money.
So here's a question that is totally off the mark here. As I look at the doors behind you, do those slide this way? And when I walk into a room and sit down at a table and have tea or something?
It's a gym.
It's a
pain cave. It's where I go to find my peace. It's where I go to find and support my why. Yeah.
Oh, awesome.
But they are designed after the shoji screen, after as a nod to his mom.
Yeah. When we designed them, yeah. She did that again.
Well, Sigrid and Arnie, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been a pleasure. I think we're going to have to do something again because there's a lot more we could talk about if you'd be willing to come back.
For sure.
Yes.
Well, thanks so much. Appreciate you.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you for your time today. Appreciate you, too.
My pleasure. Thank you for joining us today. You are profoundly appreciated. Where would I be without the team at Q1 Network? Anna DeVere, Ashley Harris, Bo Hastings, and Marlo Anderson. And my wife, Deb. Deb really orchestrates all of this for me. I have an incredible wife, partner, and friend. Thanks again for listening to Mike Seminary and Friends. Until we chat again, love y'all.